We're continuing with our seminar on Vanashram Dharma. This evening we're going to speak from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 19, A Description of Jamadweep, Text Number 10. And as this is the 5th Canto, the Sanskrit is prose, so I'm not even going to attempt to read that. It's very difficult. So we'll just do the English translation. In his own book, known as Narada Pancharatra, Bhagavan Narada has very vividly described how to work to achieve the ultimate goal of life, devotion, through knowledge and through execution of the mystic yoga system. He has also described the glories of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The great sage Narada instructed the tenets of this transcendental literature to Sarvarni Manu, in order to teach these inhabitants of Bharatvarsha, who strictly follow the principles of Vanashram Dharma, how to achieve the devotional service of the Lord. Thus Narada Muni, along with the other inhabitants of Bharatvarsha, always engage in the service of Narayan. And he chants as follows. Are you going to go over there? Okay. No. Squeak, 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 squeak. Okay. How about you? You going to stay there? Okay. Do it now or don't. Don't change. Thank you. Okay, purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has clearly declared, Bhata Bhumite Haila Manasa Janmayara Janma Sartaka Karikara Para Upakara. The real success or fulfillment of the mission of human life can be achieved in India, Bharatvarsha, because in Bharatvarsha, the purpose of life and the method for achieving success are evident. People should take advantage of the opportunity afforded by Bharatvarsha, and this is especially so for those who are following the principles of Varnashram Dharma. If we do not take to the principles of Varnashram Dharma by accepting the four social orders, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Sudra, and the four orders of spiritual life, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas, there can be no question of success in life. Unfortunately, because of the influence of Kali Yuga, everything is now being lost. The inhabitants of Bharatvarsha are gradually becoming degraded malechas and yavanas. How then will they teach others? Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is been started not only for the inhabitants of Bharatvarsha, but for all the people of the world, as announced by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There is still time, and if the inhabitants of Bharatvarsha take this movement of Krishna consciousness seriously, the entire world will be saved from gliding down to a hellish condition. This Krishna consciousness movement follows the process of Pancharatriki Vidhi, and that of Bhagavat Vidhi simultaneously, so that people can take advantage of the movement and make their lives successful. Omagana tamanandasya ganamsalaksya kaya chakshimilitamina tasme shigarave namaha shri chaitanya manobhistam stapitam yena bhutale svayam upakatamayam tadanti svapatantikam. So Prabhupada, throughout the Bhagavatam, again and again, there's reference to Vanashram Dharma and the necessity for establishing the principles of Vanashram for the purpose of saving human civilization, as Prabhupada says here, from gliding down to hell. Because it's a fact, without understanding the purpose of life, without understanding how to gradually rise oneself up from degraded condition the people are in Kali Yuga. It's practically a fact that they are on their way to hell. So we require Vanashram Dharma to do that, to teach people in a simple way according to their station in life, whether they're a student, whether they're middle age, whether they're old age, or according to their different occupational activity. Everybody has some duties. So we're going to speak about, tonight, we're going to speak about the culture of Vanashram, and we're going to speak about the economics of Vanashram Dharma. So, Vanashram is a culture. Well, let's, actually, they're both connected, of course. You know, when I speak about spiritual economics, I often inquire from whoever's in the audience about, tell me something about your culture that I may not know. So I'm an American in a foreign country, and you know your culture. You're all raised up in this culture. So what are those, some of the things in your culture that I may not know as an American? If she could not bang like that, that would be helpful. Thanks. Give her a cushion to sit on. So it usually comes up like this. Okay, attention over here. Come back here. It usually happens like this because culture is such a thing that's invisible to us. So we say, well, what's different about our culture that's different about American culture? Well, of course, you don't know perhaps American culture, so it's hard to know how it's different. But in general, culture is very invisible to us because we're indoctrinated in it from the time that we're children. And so it's like, you know, for a fish swimming in water, you know, what's water? It's just, it's everywhere. So culture is all around us. It surrounds us. I'll tell you one thing that may be part of your culture. When I was walking in town today, I came to one of the major intersections, and the crosswalk, the light was red for walking. And there was about five or six people there. And when the traffic cleared, I started to walk. But I saw that nobody else was walking. And I know that if you do this in Germany, it's a big apparat. You know, it's like people think you're very uncultured or something like that. Is that the case here? Yeah. No? Anyway, they are all waiting back there for the light, and I was thinking, oh, maybe it's like Germany here. I did something wrong. Anyway, so culture, very difficult to see because we're so steeped in it. But the economics of Vanashram and the culture, both Vanashram and the culture of modern society are very, very different. For example, one aspect of both culture and economics is ownership. Who's the owner of everything? Krishna, sure. Krishna is the owner of everything. But modern society, we don't, that's not reflected in modern society. In modern society, the idea is that I can own stuff, and you can too, and you can own as much as you really can get your hands on, right? So this came from the Romans. The Romans created this idea of unlimited private ownership, in which people could own as much as they could get their hands on, including, for the Romans, other people. Of course, modern society, we don't get to own other people yet. That may come later as things can become more degraded, but at the present time, we can own unlimited amounts of things, which is why we have 67 billionaires who have the same amount of wealth as the poorest 3.5 billion people on the planet. One of those billionaires, he owns something like 30,000 acres of land in the western United States. So 30,000 acres. That's like It's a lot. I don't know how big it is. It's a lot. Anyway, they do things like that. They can own more than what they can use. But in Krishna's world, in the Krishna conscious world, Krishna is the owner of all the land, right? All the 30,000 acres. So this is a problem actually for the Native Americans when the Europeans first went there. They made a deal that the Europeans wanted to buy Manhattan Island. I don't know if you know that history. That's where New York City is, Manhattan. All the big business district and Wall Street and so on. So for the Indians, they didn't quite understand the concept that the Americans or that the Europeans were getting at, because in the Indian conception, you can't own land. You can't own the sky. It's like trying to own the sky, like trying to own the sun. It's just like it's incomprehensible to them. How do you own the land? But, of course, the Europeans, they had a very different idea about that, and they wanted to possess it permanently. So they made a deal where they traded some wampum. The Europeans gave them some wampum, which are basically some beads or something like that. And maybe it was worth, $10 or $15 like that. They bought Manhattan Island. So you can't even buy a square centimeter for $15 probably today. Anyway, so this is one of the distinctions in the culture. Who can own what? Another one is who's in charge, okay? In the modern society, in our Western culture, the person that's in charge is the person who's he gets a post or a seat, right? So you become president or you become the chief executive officer or something like that. So you get a post and you get to be the boss. And it doesn't really matter what your qualification is. That's not the important thing. The thing is that you hold the position of authority. And that position of authority is different than actually having a qualification of authority, which is actually why they created this situation, because the powers that be that created the corporate structure, they weren't interested perhaps so much in people who had ability as they were interested in people who would do what they're told to do, right? In other words, the seat is a political position. If you get that seat, president, vice president, whatever, especially in political office, you get that seat and you do what you're told to do, then they're happy with you. Now contrast that with the Vedic culture or the Vanashram culture. Who has authority in the Vanashram culture? It's the person who's qualified. Very simple. So for example, when Suta Goswami was, he went to Naimisharanya. After Parikshit Maharaj left the planet, he went to Naimisharanya. There the sages were getting ready to perform a 1,000-year sacrifice to keep the influence of Kali at bay. And they were discussing, well, who should we have lead us in our activities? And they selected Suta Goswami because of his mature understanding and the same thing, even in the group where Parikshit was sitting on the bank of the Ganges, ready to leave the body. A lot of sages came from all over the universe to be present there, and they also had a discussion. Well, who should teach the king about to answer his questions? And the young, very young Shukadev Goswami was selected, not again by age, by seniority, or anything like that, but because he is the most learned person there. He had just returned, basically, from Brahman. He understood what all that was about. And he had heard his father speaking the Bhagavatam while he was in the womb of his mother. And on that basis decided that here's something worth being born for. But it was his mature realization of the principles of spiritual life that earned him the privilege or the honor of speaking. The same thing in, say, for example, Yudhisthira, the struggle between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. The question is who's the rightful heir to the throne? And you could say, well, it's a seat, right? It's a position. But actually, the fact of the matter is that Yudhisthira was the most qualified person. This was not just the kingdom, because there's a lot of local kingdoms. And the Pandavas, actually, if you know the story, the Pandavas would have been satisfied just to accept a village of land to be able to perform their activities, to do their dharma. But Duryodhana was not having any of that, and so the battle had to be fought. Yudhisthira, he was the king of the world. And why? Why was he the king of the world? Because he was the most qualified personality for that. It's not that he was elected, that all the kings took a vote, nothing like that, but it was by dint of his qualification. So in the Vedic culture, in the Vanashram culture, a person who has the ability, or let's put it this way, a person can have authority commensurate with their ability. So there was big kings and there was little kings. In Yudhisthira, he was the biggest king because he had the most qualification. So there's also greater and lesser brahmanas, who, depending upon what the extent of their knowledge, understanding, and realization is. So this is a big, big difference between these two cultures. Who is the owner, and where is authority given? Who has authority in the Vedic culture? So these two things make a big difference. The modern culture, as we've explained earlier, is created by the demons, by the Rakshasas, for the purpose of developing their sense gratification and for concentrating wealth. And it works very well for that. But it doesn't really serve anyone spiritually. So this is the need, or the reason why the Bhagavatam continues to speak about the need for the Vanashram culture, and why Prabhupada also speaks about the need for Vanashram culture throughout his writing, so that people can be trained to understand how to live properly, how to understand what is the truth, and how to achieve that truth. So, the economics of Vanashram culture. What is the economics? There's another big difference in the culture between modern society and Vanashram Dharma. You probably remember, or you may remember my saying, that money is a relatively recent invention. It's not older than about 2,600 years. Prior to that time, there was no such thing as a market economy as we know today. There was gold coins, yes, but there was no market economy where people would go buy and sell. Instead, the economics was done as a matter of barter, and the economic system, the basis of the economics, was agriculture, and generally then whatever was one didn't produce from themselves that they needed, they would trade for. And they would use for that what is today called a commodity currency. Commodity meaning something that everybody needs, like wheat or rice, that has a constant value, right? So a kilo of wheat has a constant value everywhere in the world. You can make a loaf of bread with that. And so it has a universal value. And so that was the basis of their exchange, was using commodity currencies like this. There's a lot of advantages to using a commodity currency. One is that everybody who's not lazy, they can produce money, right? You go to work in the spring, you plant, or in the fall, you plant your wheat, and in the spring or early summer, you harvest. You got money, right, if you do a little work. As opposed to modern society, who can print money today? The banks. They get the exclusive privilege to be able to create money out of thin air, not because they did anything, but because they have the prerogative. That's all. Huh? And everybody is supposed to pay it back with interest. Amazing system. This is how the money gets concentrated. So there was a commodity currency. Also, agriculture was the basis, the economic basis of the society. And this means that you plant one seed and you get back 100 or 500 or 1,000. So rice is like that. I think if you plant rice, you get back 5,000% rate of return. No, 10,000% rate of return. So that means you plant one seed of rice, and generally, depending on the strain, you maybe get back 100, which is a 10,000% rate of return. Different strains of wheat, you can get different amounts. Some of the older wheat that some devotees were cultivating, they would get back returns of about 150, anywhere between 50 and 150. So that's between 5,000 and 15,000% rate of return. Pretty good, right? Compared to the bank. What's the bank give you today? Now they're talking about the bank giving minus 1% rate of return. That means if you put your money in the bank, they're going to take some of it. So you want to find somewhere else to put your money. Also, they're going to eliminate money, you know that, for that reason, so that you can't take your money out of the bank and just sit on it. They want you to keep it in there so that they can steal it from you. So get ready. This is what's coming. Another big difference in culture. What else about the economics? So people would do barter, and they would do exchange for the necessities. The benefit of this type of economy is that, one, as long as people aren't lazy, there's no poor people, because everybody can produce money. And two, nobody was... like now we have all these 57 billionaires, right, with tens of billions of dollars each that they can't conceivably use. Well, in a simple, what do you call it? Subsistence economy, where people are producing what they need. In a simple subsistence economy, there is no concentration of wealth. Yes, you may have some vices who are able to store up a bit of cloth or maybe have some food stuff, you know, a big store of stock of natural wealth like that. But there was no gargantuan store of artificial store of wealth. Because why? Because if you try to keep such a big stock, maybe the bugs are going to eat it, and then you have losses that way. So the point is that you only produce basically what you need. You don't plan for much beyond that. So for example, if you're going to plant for potatoes, right? So how many potatoes do you plant? Well, you plant enough so that you have potatoes until you get potatoes next year. Maybe you plant 25% more to pay for tax, and maybe you plant another 25% just in case there's some loss of some kind. Okay? But the point is, if you're planting potatoes just for the sake of potatoes, then your work is limited by what you require. It's very simple. But if you're planting potatoes for money, how many potatoes are you going to plant? Unlimited amount, right? As much as you can get land. I'll plant more potatoes so I can get more money. Huh? Or if same thing, if you're taking care of cows, how many cows do you want to keep? Well, my family and I, we need a half a cow. So we'll share a cow with a neighbor, right? And we'll each have the milk that we need. But if you're instead of trying to get milk from the cow, if you're trying to get money from the cow, how many cows do you need? Unlimited. So now we have cow cities. You see some of these feedlots where they, dairy industry, where they have, you know, thousands of cows in one place, which creates an environmental problem. And they blame the cow for that. They concentrate all the cow's urine and stool in such a way so that it becomes a problem. And then it's the cow's fault. It's not their fault for the way they're managing the cow. It's such a crazy world, Kali Yuga. Anyway, so the point is that there's many advantages to having a natural economy, being dependent on the land, to having a subsistence economy where we produce simply what we need. Yes, we don't get perhaps the wealth to acquire the tangible kinds of things that we might have in modern society. But what we have instead are the non-tangibles that modern society does not have. Okay, for example, did we speak about this last time? Tangibles and intangibles? I think so. Huh? So the non-tangibles, well, people want time. They want to have time with their children. They want to have some recreation. They want to be able to do work that they love. Well, the pressure of modern economics doesn't allow people to have that freedom. And so they wind up with things instead, right? And we've got a smartphone, or we've got a notebook computer, we've got some electronics or a car. So we've got things, we have tangible assets, but we don't have the non-tangibles. In the Vanashram culture, it's switched. You have the non-tangibles, but you don't have perhaps the tangibles. Not to saying that you could not have, but that depends on if people are willing to do the kind of work that's necessary to be done to be able to produce those things. Modern society is able to produce all of these gadgets because they're able to get all the specialty materials that they need. Like, what are some of the ones that they have in the phones these days? Not palladium. There's one. Tungsten? Yeah, so there's exotic metals like tungsten or zirconium or things like this, which are very difficult to get. And the people who do this work to get these minerals out of the ground, of course, it's like slave labor. If they had a chance, they would probably rather not be doing that. But because everybody's really struggling simply to survive, they'll take whatever job they can get to get the money. Of course, you know about the Apple phone that came out. The story came out some years ago. All the workers were at where they make the Apple phone. They were committing suicide. They'd go up to the top floor of the building and they'd jump off because they couldn't handle the pressure of the. They were forced to work like 18 hours a day, you know, without a bathroom break and, you know, so many crazy things like that. They would keep them locked up in rooms where they would sleep in shifts like this. Some would be working, others would be sleeping, and it was so terrible that they would just commit suicide. So what the factory did, they erected nets out just above the first floor of the building. They put nets out so that if somebody tried to commit suicide, they would fall into the net. So they'd have to go jump in front of a train or go somewhere else. Don't commit suicide here. It's bad for our image, right? And, of course, Why were they doing that? Because they didn't pay these people enough to live, right? Now, you know how much an Apple phone costs, right? Something like 500 euros, something like that. Huh? 700. Oh my God. And what does it cost them? What do they pay that factory to make that phone? 5 euros. So they could pay those people 10 times what they're making and still make a huge profit. But, you know, this is the economics of Tom and Kuhn, huh? This is terrible. So things like that go on in modern society because of the demand. People must have some money somehow or other in order to survive. In the Vanashram or the Vedic culture, you don't have situations like that. People have the ability to be able to produce a simple life, what they need, without the pressure, without the pressure of being squeezed so much that you want to commit suicide. Again, you may not have all of the luxuries that we have in modern society, but people are basically satisfied, because it's a culture in sattva. What else about economics? The difference, culture. The culture is, Vanashram Dharma is a culture of sattva guna. Okay, and it not only, it practically speaking, you could say it forces us to come to sattva gun. Number one, because agriculture and cow protection, these activities in and of themselves, they force people to come to sattva. If you don't plant on time, then you don't eat. So everybody learns how to be on time, diligent, do things in a timely way. These are qualities of sattva gun. If you don't harvest on time, again, you don't eat. So nature controls people's behavior and forces them to act in sattva, whereas in modern society, it doesn't work like that. We've separated modern activity from the clock, from the clock of nature, so that you can do things in your own time, in your own way. Except for agriculture, still. But, what was the subject of that? It wasn't time. What was it? Oh, sattva, yeah, thank you. Yeah. So the culture forces one to come to sattva. Modern society, of course, is a culture of rajagun and tamagun. So there's a very big difference in that because the result of these different gunas is tremendous. The result of rajagun is what? Suffering. Suffering, yeah. People, they get nice trinket. Oh, I've got some happiness in rajagun, but the end result of rajagun is suffering. You're working too much. You're working too hard. You don't have time to have any peace for yourself or be with your children. So that's the result of rajagun. Too much. Right? I'm going to plant acres and acres of potatoes so I can get a lot of money, but the result is I don't have any time. The Vanashram culture, I planned as many potatoes as I need for next year, and I can do that in one afternoon, and work is finished. The other day, for example, I saw an article about a fellow who built a home in UK, a little like hobbit house, for 250 British pounds. That's all he spent on it. It was a daub house made from clay and straw. Very cute little house. But he finished it like within 2 months' time. No mortgage, right? No stress. Doesn't have to make a housing payment. Whereas compared to modern society, you buy a house and you're paying on it for 30 years. There's a fellow that makes a TED talk. What's his name? John Jundai. Anybody seen his little video? Why do we work so hard? What's the title of it? Why is society? Something like Anyway, he's a fellow from Thailand. And he tells his story about simple living, about how he was struggling to eat. He would go to university to Bangkok, and he couldn't even afford to get a bowl of rice every day. So after struggling so hard, after he got his to get his university degree, and then seeing how everybody's working in such a crazy way, he decided, this is nuts. I'm going to go back home. So he went back to his land. His parents had land. And he started working on the land. And his friends were trying to get a house, but they had to pay a mortgage for 30 years. And he was building houses, spending 2 hours a day, and then within 2 months, he'd have a house built. So he built about 5 houses on his land. And he said, my problem tonight is where I'm going to sleep, which house I will sleep in. So this is the point is, modern society makes everything more difficult, more troublesome. Why? Because all your energy is very stealthily sucked from you and made to benefit somebody else, the bankers. So the culture of Vanashram Dharma and the culture of modern society are very, very different. The economics of both of them are very, very different. And they have a different purpose. They have a different result. And the result of Sattva-gun is happiness, right? You become conditioned by the idea of happiness that, yeah, life is good. Huh? But the result of Rajagun is suffering. So, two very, very different cultures. And of course, the main idea of the Vanashram cultures is explaining in this verse and purport that everyone at the end of life goes back to Godhead. So this is why Prabhupada, he was pushing it. It's not just him, but the Shastra says, Bhagavatam is saying, we need to live, this is how we should live, according to the principles of Varna and Ashram. This is human life. Anything less than that is not human life. And we'll talk about that point another time. Anyway, we'll stop there for discussion. Next week, on Wednesday night, I'm going to speak about the role of women in Vanashram Dharma. So, a lot of, sometimes devotees have the opinion that women have no role in Vanashram Dharma, but that's not at all true. So we're going to speak about what their role is. Okay, so we'll stop now. Any questions or comments? Microphone.
How long are you going to stay here? Didn't you say you're going to leave this week?
I'll be here till the end of the month.
Okay, very nice. Thank you.
I heard if you want to start farm, that state will not allow you.
I want to start a farm?
No, if you want to start a farm, government will not allow you. You must.
Oh, yeah, the government may not allow you. That's true. Well, you know, ultimately Krishna consciousness becomes political because the government's demonic. And they don't want you to be independent. And they're doing things, you know, that, for example, in Europe, I don't know about here, maybe you tell me, they passed laws that you cannot plant seeds that are not approved by the government. Is that true here? No? Not yet. Not yet, no? Yeah, I forget where else that is. Maybe it's in Germany or somewhere, but in some places it's like that. So when I heard that, I was thinking, well, how are they going to know? You know, they're going to come around and look at your seeds. Well, of course, they control what kind of seeds you can buy. Or if you try to bring seeds in, you know, in some other way, you know, you can get arrested. So, Yeah, they want to control these things. And of course, the idea is not to allow people to become independent. So ultimately, yeah, ultimately it has to become political. You know, who's going to be able to decide what people can do? So, Krishna consciousness is political, right? Bhagavad Gita spoken on a battlefield. No questions? Yeah.
I wanted to ask, I visited New Braj Dam in Hungary, and I saw that they're living without electricity in uh-huh. the evening. Everything was dark. So for me, this sounds frightening to go on a farm and live, and there's no electricity, no light, no electronic devices. You cannot wash your clothes in washing machine. I mean, for us, we grew up in cities. How are we going to?
For city people, this is terrible.
Yes.
Well, okay, this is a good question because it comes back to economics, okay? The idea is simple living, high thinking. Prabhupada repeated this phrase over and over again. And he also repeated one that was less well known. He said, referring to Vanashram Dharma, produce only what you need. Nice idea. But use only what you produce. That's a big challenge. Yeah? Produce only what you need. Okay, I only need enough potatoes till next year. That's all I produce, right? But then use only what you produce. So, he said if we just follow this one principle, it would change the whole planet, right? Because light bulbs. Who's going to make that? Are we going to make that in our village? And so on. Now, back to your point about no electricity. The question comes, how are you going to pay for it? Okay? Because if you're trying to live a simple life, the question is, what are you growing? Are you growing food or are you growing money? And how much money do you need? If I have to pay the mortgage, if I have to pay the electric bill, if I have to pay for all the electronic things, electricity, then how much money do I need? Then I'm no longer growing food, I'm growing money. Because the idea is I got to take this and I got to transform it into money. And the arrangement of modern market economy is such that if you're a small farmer, you will go out of business. It was the policy of the United States government between 1933 and 1983, 50 years, to drive the small farmer out of business. It was the policy of the United States government. And so the motto was, you get big, you become a farm corporation, or you get out. So this was their method of driving people off of the land. They didn't want people off the land. In 1933, 50% of the people or more still lived on the land, which is why the Great Depression at that time was not that catastrophic, because most of the people were growing their own food. Now we have the situation where 3% of the people live on, or no, 97% of the people live on 3% of the land. The other 3% are farmers. So everybody's concentrated, right? 97% on 3% of the land. They're concentrated in the big cities. And you have 3% of the people producing food for all those. But of course, the people who are not producing food, they're hostage to the situation. I remember the first time I planted a garden when I was a young grihastha. And it was an amazing experience for me. Because, of course, everybody knows that food comes from the earth. But when I actually had my garden, and when it was time for dinner, I would just go out and pick food instead of going to the store. It was such an amazing experience. And I remember thinking, why does anybody work? This is so easy, right? You plant a few seeds and here's food. You don't have to go to work. You don't have to, you know, do this crazy lifestyle. It's so simple. So this is why no electricity. How are you going to pay for it? Now there needs to be Shishi Panchatantra Kiyita. You know, we're not going to change the world overnight, nor there should there be any effort to do that. It's taken more than 100 years to produce this type of civilization. And it'll take us 100 years to get back to that. But as far as your question about the washing machine. Actually, both the washing machine and the electricity can be produced if you have the infrastructure, which means you use the bull, right? So the bull, he can go around in a circle and produce power, which can then be used to turn a washing machine or turn a generator and produce power. So it's just a matter of setting up the infrastructure to be able to do that. So those things can be done, and they likely will be done in time. And you'll wait till then, right? Yeah, well, that's okay. But, you know, that requires technology also. If you're having wind electricity, so you need a generator. You know, this again is, it depends on to what degree you want to follow this principle. Produce only what you use. You know, if you can't produce a generator, okay, then you don't use electricity. Or not just a generator, you know, wiring, switches, light bulbs, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, the question is, okay, those things can be done, yes, but do people want to make such a drastic change in their lifestyle? No. Just like you, you know. People, you can't take a glass out of the freezer and put it into a pot of boiling water. It'll break, you know. So the change has to be more gradual. However, change to simple living may be forced on people by changing the economic system. That can happen any day. They keep talking about it. Everything's going to crash. It will someday. So, yes.
In my childhood, I remember seeing a 200-year-old washing machine for heavy carpets in the water mill.
Wow. On a river, a water mill on a river. Give him the microphone, please. Oh, that's all you want to say. So you saw a 200-year-old washing machine for washing big carpets. Yeah. So, yeah, the same principle. It's not difficult to do, but the thing is, we don't see that technology anymore because everything's been changed. Some of the devotees in Lithuania, they were getting all different information about ox-powered equipment. And they used to have it so that you would have two teams of eight oxen turning, going around the turnstile. And they would turn a shaft that would go inside a building, and inside that building then they had all different modern kinds of machinery for woodworking or for metalworking even. So they had the technology like that to do the things that they wanted to do. Of course, we no longer see that because we use electricity. We use electric motors or we use gasoline motors. But that technology is very simple, and it can again be put back into practice if people are determined. There's a lot of benefit to producing only what you need because it simplifies life, right? If we're going to have this stuff, You know, a lot of people have to suffer from that. I'll give you an example. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, or Dearborn, Michigan, which is the hometown of Henry Ford, the car capital of America, or used to be. And when I was a young man, I had several jobs working in the car factories. I had one job for summer. I was working in the iron foundry where they were casting the engine blocks for the automobiles. And going to that place was just exactly like going to hell, right? It was dark. There's smoke and fire everywhere. It was hot. And there was all these crude people who, and you could, even as a young man, I could tell that simply by being in that environment, it destroyed whatever good qualities that they might have had. I had another job working for a company that was assembling the seats for the automobile. Okay, so you know, everybody, you get in the car, you sit in the seat, you don't think twice about it. But I'll tell you that the people who worked in that factory making those seats, they became degraded by that activity. Yes, they are shrewd people anyway, but why should they be doing the activity which destroys their very character so that they have to drink in order to survive? And who is it? Pope Pius XII, I think, said something like that. That it's terrible that, you know, raw material goes in the factory and it comes out improved, but people go in the factory and they come out degraded. So this is what happens. You know, now if people had a choice that they could live a simple life and be provided for and not become degraded, wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? I think so. You know, the idea is, in this verse we are reading, the quoting, Prabhupada was quoting Lord Chaitanya, para upakara, means do good for others. That means you act in such a way so that other people can benefit. So we'll talk in another class about our different roles in Vanashram Dharma and whoever is going to be the brahmanas. Huh? Any brahmanas here?
Wannabe brahmanas.
Wannabe brahmana. Well, okay. You have to remember the Vedic culture, you have to become qualified. Right? You have to become qualified. So it's not just a position, okay, we'll nominate you for the brahmana, but no, you have to know what you're doing. And so, because why? Because the brahmana is in charge of directing the rest of society. This is a big deal, right? I mean, it's not that you've got your little job. You have to understand what are the needs of society, how's it supposed to work, how do people should be put in a place, how they're supposed to relate to each other. Okay? Who's going to sign up to be a brahmana? Who's qualified to be a brahmana? Huh? And if we don't do it, who's going to do it? This is what Prabhupada wanted. He wanted to establish a brahminical class of men so that they could guide the creation of proper spiritual culture. This is what we have to do. Something more. Give him the microphone. Careful with that wire.
So I have like a small comment. When you said that 3% of people that are working on the farms, they're like farm corporations, but that means their goal is making money, not making good food.
Right.
So they use excessive pesticides, so we get ill from that.
Right.
So that's the problem. Also, you have all these cancers is rising. So no wonder why, eh?
Yeah. They're not growing food, they're growing money. Right? And so what they're doing is exploiting the land, and they do it through the process of killing. Right? Our food is produced as a result of killing. Killing insects, killing, you know, the nutrition of the soil. I mean, it's just, you know, the what's supposed to sustain us, give us life, is actually a product of death. This is a result of making our food from tamagun. Yeah. Take the microphone over there, please.
Kakšna je pol ideja Varnašra med tako v nekem, če ravno pogledamo med baktami, da to bo tako postopoma bolj enostavno življenje, ali bomo tu šli v neko skrajnost, ko smo rekli, brez elektrike, brez vode in pokje tista meja.
You should switch microphones with him. Aha. Give him, because Slovenian is going in your microphone.
Ok, bo še počas prevajala in bevdel. Zdaj, če smo tako v Iskonu, ne, Iskon kot, da bi ustanovili eno tako varno ašramo in tako narav, eno farmo.
The question was, how are we supposed to shift from our modern culture, living in modern culture to Varnashrama Dharma, how gradually should we make changes? Are we just gonna live more simple and more in contact with nature, or should have this?
We have an example of Nivrajadham just several hours away. They've been at it for 20 years, and how are they doing it? So, you know, they started out biting the bullet with no electricity. You have to switch. Sorry.
Wait.
Just in translate. Okay, we have an example of that from Nivrajadham. And there they started out biting the bullet, no electricity. And they didn't even have running water for many years. And they had firewood for heat. So this is the definition of simple living, right? Chop wood, carry water.
Ampak kje je tako zdaj neka meja, ne? Mislim, tako, kje je isto merilo nekak. Po drugi strani, nekdo je bolan, če tam ne vidi, bo šel v zdravniku počala, tam nima zdaj, da bo unimo naredil doma stekla, spihal neko lučkico, da bo gledal. Potem tudi, ne vem, ki je zdaj meja simple life? Mi imamo nož, so s kamni vtolkli, ne? Se bomo iz kamni rezali, bomo uporabili nož, to je že tehnologija neka. Zdaj, ki je ta meja?
He should be talking in your microphone.
I understand, but...
Yeah. No, it's for something else.
Okay.
Just yeah, that's good.
The question was, how are we supposed to totally cut out on a technological advancement? Like, for instance, if there's a person that is sick or cannot see well, are we going to make glasses themselves, or we're going to send him to doctor? Where is this border between...
There's no rules like this.
Ne obstaja nobenih takih pravil.
You have to see what you can do.
Videti morate, kaj lahko naredite.
So, for example, Bhakti Raghava Swami, he's got a project in southern India. And they don't use soap there. But what they do is they grow a plant which produces what is called soap nuts. So the seeds of this plant act like soap. When you do your wash, you throw these seeds in there, and your wash becomes clean. Well, that's great for them, but it doesn't grow up here in a cold climate. So what are we going to do? And we're not going to do that. We have to do something else. So it's got to be different everywhere. And it depends on the people and what they're going to do. Okay? Should we not use eyeglasses? No, I don't agree with that. We should use eyeglasses. So there's a limit to what we're going to do. The question is how to create the culture so that it serves the purpose of spiritual development. There was a book that was written like this over 100 years ago. It's called Looking Backwards, about some kind of Rip Van Winkle fellow. He fell asleep or something like that and woke up 100 years later and saw how the world had changed. And the culture had changed after the big war, and they decided they were going to change all these bad things of modern society. They were going to get rid of money. And because, you know, they have this expression, time is money, they got rid of time also. They stopped using clocks. So that's a little extreme. But anyway, so a lot of people think about those things. There's a video that somebody was just telling me about the other day. What's it called? Convention? Convention? Anybody heard that video? Anyway, a lot of people, they write, you know, they write about this, or they make videos, movies about it. Or Thrive. How about Thrive? Anybody seen the video Thrive? Or Zeitgeist? So these are all videos about people who are looking at the problems of modern life and trying to understand how are we going to solve all these problems and live in a way that's harmonious. Unfortunately, they don't understand the gunas. They don't understand consciousness. And so, you know, while they're at least striving in the right direction, we need to help. We need to do our part also. Anyway, what will we do? We'll do what we have to. Or we'll, you know, that has to all be decided. Right? You read the book 1984? They also go through that. Right? What's the future going to be like? They've got their dystopian idea, how to create a perfect world, or a brave new world, these books. Everybody can see that modern society has a problem, but what's the cause of the problem they don't understand? And what we say is the cause of the problem is lack of our connection with God. If we're not connected with God, things go down. Darkness comes in and destroys everything. So it's a balance. This is the role of the kshatriya is very important. The role of the brahmin and kshatriya to guide society, to tell people, no, you can't do that or you shouldn't do that. And here's why. Something else? He's got more. The philosopher. Give him the right one. Give him your...
In vprašanje imam, v varna ašrami vsakdo ima neke svoje pač obveznosti in dožnosti, predvsem dožnost je to pomembna, smo rekli kvalifikacija ali dožnost. Zdaj, kako bi to preverjali, recimo v šudra lahko preverimo, naredil dobro, ni dobro naredil, ali končal neko stvar, ni vajšja, je zaslužil denar ali ne. Recimo kšatrija in brama nam videli, da recimo v Krišna buku, ko je enim bramani umrl otrok, je šel do kšatrija in rekel, to mi umrl otrok, ti nad slabo vladaš, slabi kralj. Potem bramane so deli jagije in teh jagih so prišla nova žival. Zdaj pa lahko si ti neki, šudro bo že pa kontroliral, kaj pa bramana, pa kšatrija, pa kako vprašanje, kako ta pogled na sem.
Okay, so the question is how we should range our qualities, how we should test a certain person, whether he is a shudra, whether he finished something accordingly or well, or he didn't at all, whether Vaishya made money or whether kshatriya is a good king. I know that sometimes if somebody's son or a child would die, they would say, oh, my son died and you are not a good king, or
so these are all good questions.
How we would test the
these
Brahmanas.
Are all good questions. Okay, so, it's not necessary to go through the whole list. I understand. What's the answer? You come up with the answer. Based on spiritual principles. Based on Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. Can you do that? We need men who can do that. So put your, you know, engage your brain. I think you can do that. Actually, how I know you, I think you can do this work. You're a good candidate. So all these questions Super Soul is giving you now, get to work. I'm serious. Okay, short one. Only a short question.
Yeah.
Not long, not your long question.
Jaz bi dal kratek odgovor, mogoče na tole vprašanje. Eno je, posušimo meto in malo soli in imamo zobno pasto. Iz pepela presejemo in naredimo odličen prašek, ne ga skuhamo. Recimo, to so dve stvari, ki so zelo uporabni. Lahko pa tudi pepel uporabimo za gnojenje na njivi.
Thank you.
Okay, so the gentleman...
Speak up, please.
The gentleman was giving a short commentary, just an
the
advice...
The what didn't what?
He had a comment.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So he just wanted to give an advice how to make your own toothpaste and how to fertilize the earth.
Try.
How to make soap or how to fertilize earth with some ashes and...
If anybody's interested in that, I've got a friend in India. He can give something like 32 gigabytes of such information. So, anybody wants to know. Anyway, there's a lot of information like this. But we need people who will do it. All the formulas are there. Okay, it's time to stop. So, next time we're going to speak about the role of women in Varnashram Dharma. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Dhaneshwara Prabhu ki. Jai.